So I am speaking to, it's a Hoslin name from Boston. And what I'm going to do is talk about social media from the perspective of someone who's lived it, who's pretty much espoused it to clients, and someone who can give insight into why it's working for you. Okay? So can I ask you first your background? Traditionally, what have you done before social media?
Well, I came from corporate. I used to work for IBM.
Okay.
I was the product manager for an e-learning product. And e-learning is essentially using software to train employees, traditional training. And from there, I was the liaison between the developers and the sales reps. So I had to be versed in all the tools and resources and the technology, as well as how to position that technology to close deals. So I would only get involved with the biggest, most sensitive deals for IBM regarding the e-learning products that they were deploying. I also had to have a good understanding of other products so that I could integrate that solution with other products, notes, and the hardware and things like that. My formal training, and I have a degree in engineering.
Right.
And the anomaly was I had a good sense of logic, and all the people that I went to school with are very logical, but I used to just hang out with the business people. And those two worlds are two different worlds. So I'm that layer between technology and business.
Uh-huh.
And one person quoted me, or after speaking to me for about half an hour, just recently said, you know what, you wrap marketing around technology, right? Like, I speak to a lot of people, and you do that more than, you know, I've never met a person that's been able to do that. Because I have a foundation of technology, I know how all the bells and whistles and zeros and ones kind of fit together. I also have a sense of not only the bells and whistles, but how can it effectively be applied in your business so you could grow systematically.
Right. And it's funny because with social media coming up, it's really, it changes the way users and consumers interact with the web, and a lot of that has been the basis of software changes, tool changes within the space itself. It's now become a platform for social media and conversation and all that, and that's kind of why the two worlds have come together.
Right.
Do you agree?
Yeah, and I think so. Like, for example, I was very fortunate that within like 2 years when I was in IBM, I helped the team to – are you familiar with Herman Miller?
No.
Herman Miller, they invented the cubicle. They have those ergonomic chairs.
Okay.
That have 1,200 positions, right? So I helped get them implementing e-learning into their environment. And it's typical to, you know, it's the same type of analogy that I would use when you're implementing social media. And I was fortunate because I got put in a full-page ad representing IBM within, like,
okay.
2 years, which was in, like, Wall Street Journal, Fortune 500, and all these other different companies, or different, you know, forms of media from, you know, the Internet to, you know, being on the side of a building, and it was really funny. So I take that process. And I've applied it to social and new media, right? Because social is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, it's really getting to the point where it's the technology and the business, right? It's all
right.
About people, right? So how do people like information, right? How do they like to interact? And it's no longer a broadcast, right? A traditional forms of advertising, it's a broadcast message, right? It's one way. It's on television. Right, shooting you information. It's on a magazine or a billboard, shooting it one way, right? Even traditional online or, you know, when original advertising online, it was just banner ads, just one way, right? And you just click to get more information, and that's the only form of, interactivity. Now things have evolved to a point where people are communicating and are asking for, or corporations are asking for, participation in the development of good products. just recently, for example, yesterday, I was watching watching television, and they a company played a commercial that was created by their market. They said, "Hey, look, we ran a contest online, and this was the winning commercial, and here it is." I didn't really like it, and I'm like, "Wow, how could this win?" But in any event, what that encouraged people to be part of the brand, not separate to the brand, and that's really what we're you know where we are right now, and the companies that don't implement that are really starting to you know lose a lot of market share.
So that leads me to, okay, before I actually have a question for that, but for you yourself, what was the turning point in your career? Like what made you, so you left IBM, I'm assuming?
Yes.
And did you venture out on your own right off, or what did you do?
First, before, well, I have always had an entrepreneur spirit. Like I've always, one of the first foray was when I worked at Gillette when I was an undergrad going to school, and I used to do their networking. Like I used to install software, and I used to go and troubleshoot the desktops of all the executives in the Gillette headquarters in the Prudential in Boston. And what I used to do during that time was, as the software was installing, I just used that time to essentially get mentored by all the executives. I would ask them questions on how they got to their career, and they would just provide me essentially free consulting. So I developed relationships with a few of the executives who invited me to go to their house and install software and hardware and things like that because they knew my work. So that opened up a door for me to, you know, to do that type of consulting, right? Because they liked the way I spoke to them. They liked the way that I just knew my information. And they could talk, and it wasn't all geeky talk. It wasn't all software. It's just life stuff. So that opened up the door for me to just start consulting and start helping small businesses. Really, at that time, it was really just buying computers, right? And then computers became a commodity. So, you know, I needed to add more value to it. So set up networks and things like that. So that when I was in IBM, one of the reasons why I left was because I was on the fast track of IBM, right? Fast track in IBM means they want a general manager, like Harvard. Like I took a class at Harvard to see what that was like because I had an engineering degree, and then I was looking at getting a combined law and business degree. And at that time, I was doing a lot of research so that when I was in IBM, I got mentored. Again, it's just like divine intervention. It's like the secret. Like you ask for something and it comes. And it was like my mentor was mentored by the number two guy at IBM, and IBM had like 300,000 employees. And what I learned was that in order to grow within IBM, I needed to be on rotation in a new position every 2 years in different departments within IBM because they just want that general manager to become vice president. So that's like 2 years in HR, 2 years in consulting, 2 years in hardware, 2 years in legal, 2 years in software. And I started adding up the numbers. It's like, wow, this is like just those five examples is 10 years of my life. And I'm like, I don't think I want to dedicate all that time for this company that essentially reinvents itself every 6 months. And there's no sense of progress because it's this elephant in the room. So I ventured off and I did, I sold insurance. I sold life insurance right after that because one of the traits that I needed to know that I was good at, Not that I wasn't, but I just needed to validate it with selling so that I felt like if I sold life insurance, that's the toughest sell, right? Because you're selling something to someone that's not going to use the product, and in half an hour, at most an hour, I used to just have people give me checks. We used to walk in as a stranger. They wouldn't know me. I used to just walk out with the check, and it's like that was an amazing process. So that really gave me some confidence. And then from there on, again, I just focus on, like, local businesses, primarily the Latino community because I am Dominican.
Okay.
My parents are from the Dominican Republic, and I was the first generation born in the United States. So okay. I always had an affinity to help out those businesses that needed the assistance the most. right? So then that opened up all kind of doors for me.
So you didn't get into social media straight off. What type of consulting or what type of help were you providing these companies or these communities?
Actually, you know, I was in social media indirectly looking back at it because some of the clients that I got involved with, they actually were nonprofit organizations that dealt with running networking events every month. So then I started thinking, okay, how could I add the most value? How could I create a system that adds the most values to the members, right? So I would record every single networking event because there would be a speaker there and I'll take pictures and things like that. So I was leveraging video, and I would put that on YouTube, and then I would put that on the homepage, and I would give the members like a summary of the event if they missed it, and if they, you know, were there, they, you know, they recap, get some notes, or do whatever. So it was an indirect form of social media because video is a component of social media.
Right.
And that helped drive traffic, and that helped give that site some freshness. So I didn't really look at and think about it at the time, but in retrospect, it was essentially the social media because of I just knew what the technologies were out there, and I just put it in there, and it just happened to really work out.
So tell me about, was it a first incident or a first client, or what event happened that made you want to delve more deeply into this medium?
I think it's all a progression since, as I mentioned, starting off with technology and then realizing that, oh, for me personally, I like the technology. I like hanging out with nerds. I'm a sense of a nerd because, you know, I'm very logical. But there's also a dynamic of being social. And I think the social was with marketing people that they could communicate. They could hang out, and they're just social people. And I'm Dominican, so Latinos are very social. We have a high regard to family. So I think that it's been an evolution. And I think looking back at it, I've been doing social media for a longer time than I would admit it because I don't think it really existed with a category name at the time, right? And
how many years would that be?
I incorporated in 1999, so it's like 8 years. And I was doing a lot of it just like on the grassroots level beforehand. So I would say a good solid 8 years.
So are you talking about more from an offline perspective? And when did you hit online?
It was both, really, because...
Oh, it was both, okay.
Right, because I was still setting up websites, and I was still doing things of that nature for my clients. Not necessarily for me, but more. It was like more word of mouth. So it was like getting them, you know, how to best leverage the internet was always how to best leverage technology, not necessarily the internet, because at the time I was really focused on just computer setups and all that other thing, and all those other things like that. So.
So for you, from a social media perspective, the credibility and the traffic that came to your site, how much of it was attributed to the medium, and what did you use to get it to that level?
I would say the majority of it the majority of the traffic that I received was from the medium, from like a Twitter. Right, more so Twitter than Facebook, and I think it's primarily because of those media. Twitter is a fast-paced, real-time entity versus Facebook is a little bit more network-oriented. I don't see myself really hanging out on Facebook that much because it's like a delayed bulletin board where a lot of information is there, and you see transactional things. It's more historical in nature, right?
And
so after things happen, you go there and you do it, and you
right.
post it, and whatever. Where Twitter was more real time, like when you could have a fully fledged conversation with people that you wouldn't normally have the opportunity to have a conversation with.
Right.
And it worked from both perspectives, right? It worked from the person that's very well known and wants to keep their finger on the pulse. You can communicate with them and they can respond, and then that develops more of their credibility, right? Because you get to, it's like talking to a major president, you know, or a major celebrity. It's like, wow, they acknowledge me. This is great. Like, I appreciate them more. It's like reaching out to a fan. And then you have, you know, opportunity to contribute to the conversation. And it's not a one-way stream, similar to the whole issue that I spoke to you about, or I mentioned earlier, about corporations that broadcast. Now when you start incorporating individuals or your market into creating and, you know, solidifying the brand, there's much more loyalty from that perspective. So
right.
the traffic came, and it was much more qualified traffic. Like, people really started getting a sense of, wow, this is great. Like, interviews like this came out because I was able to provide good content on a consistent basis, and not necessarily be focused on, like, selling. It's just like, yeah, this is what I know. Here it is.
And I think it's hard in a lot of cases for a lot of corporations, especially blue chip, to embrace the medium, partly because they're so used to a one-way, uniform, top-down message, and they don't really know what to do when then there's, like, a two-way conversation happening, because their first and foremost priority is to guard their brand. And so, you know, they want to mitigate a lot of the negative stuff.
Right.
And if there's stuff being said about them from the grassroots level, especially in an open public forum, how do they control that? And I think that's one thing that they lack when they're in this space is control. Are you finding that? Are you finding that is it the smaller companies that are willing to embrace it more because their brands aren't as public, aren't as I guess proliferated as the bigger ones, or are you starting to see some movement from the bigger ones as well?
Well, it doesn't. The size of a company doesn't matter. That's
okay.
An interesting kind of concept. It's more the leadership, right? Because if you take like a Bill Gates, Phil Knight, and Donald Trump, and you have them come up with the business plan starting from scratch, you're going to bank on them versus someone or group of unknowns with an excellent idea, right? It's really the mentality and the progressiveness of the individuals. Because I still work with small companies, but they still don't have the vaguest understanding of what this new economy is about, and they're actually creating more work for themselves. Even if at the very minimum they're tracking their reputation online as far as like what people are saying about them so that they can have a sense to craft a message that is addressing that particular issue.
Right.
I think it's important. Like, for example, case study, kryptonite, right? Are you familiar with the kryptonite story? The kryptonite?
I don't think so.
Okay. Years ago, kryptonite, are you familiar with kryptonite locks?
Yes.
Okay. And when you think of kryptonite locks, what do you associate with kryptonite locks?
Oh. You tell me. I'm familiar with it. I'm not that familiar with it.
Okay. Kryptonite locks was synonymous with security and impenetrable bike locks and locks for your cars and things like that. So they became almost a de facto standard. They became the Gillette, right? The name became synonymous with what they did at that time. Now.
Oh, okay. I know who you're talking about now. Is this Ingersoll Rand company that owned them? I don't, yeah, okay. I was thinking about something else. Thank you. Sorry for that. Thanks for clarifying.
Okay, yeah, they make bike locks, and they make locks primarily and I think they also make car locks as well. But bike locks, they were pretty much the de facto standard. It's almost like master lock, was like, that's the best lock. And you need to, you know, you could even shoot at it. And I can remember seeing a commercial where they shoot at the lock and it still remained closed, blah, 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 blah. So with Kryptonite lock, what happened is somebody figured out that with the regular big pen, you could take off the cap and you could open up a Kryptonite lock, right? They put a video out there into the what they call the blogosphere, and the world ate it up. And Kryptonite was slow to respond, almost ignoring it. And what happened is their credibility as a security company or someone that has secure locks was completely damaged, right? It's almost irreparable. Like now, it's still out there because you can't necessarily delete all the different references. Once it's out there, it's out there. And there's devices that are documenting the internet every single day. So once it's out there, it's out there, right? So that's why companies have to be careful what they put out there, because if they say something incorrect or if they lie or try to manipulate, it's documented. They have to be very sensitive. And I can understand the sense of control. However, there is this level of transparency that needs to happen. And once that happens, it's almost like the more control you give up, the more control you have. Because people will just, because we're human, right, and we're emotional, we associate an emotion to the company. It's like, wow, they're not perfect, but, you know, that I could stick with them because they're going to deliver something of value all the time. And if they find something wrong, they're going to address it right away. So that's one example of a company that should have been up on social media and ignored it and kind of felt the ramifications of not being attuned to what's happening. And that's a major company, and small companies do this all the time, if they're even on the radar screen for people to document their progression, you know?
Now, I do remember one of the examples that somebody had told me about, and this is a huge one, with Mentos and Coke. Do you remember that? And when they put a Mentos in Coca-Cola and it blew up. Remember the amount of acidity in there? And Coke and suddenly it became this big YouTube thing where people just started sharing it and just forwarding it to everybody. And Coke didn't know what to do about it. In fact, it actually played in their favor, because I think later on they end up leveraging that in creation of another commercial that ended up even being more funny. So it helped them build the brand in a positive way, but they also had to respond to the health concerns because of the amount of acidity in Coke and what the potential harm it could do to the human body because of that experiment, right? And but they played it up very well, and they're able to respond to it in a way that made people, I don't even know if it was trust, but create a little bit more credibility or accessibility to the brand.
So. Right, because again, and there's some keywords that you mentioned there. The primary keyword, the primary word that you mentioned was a response, right? And traditionally, responses have been via press releases and stale, right, where they responded and embraced it and actually had a contest that had people create different variations of the Mentos Coke reaction, if you will, and they embraced it because people know that at the end of the day, no one's perfect, right?
Right.
They trust brands. Right, and that just adds, that takes the brick and mortar out from in between a company and their marketplace. It makes it more like a glass flexible wall, right? Where people
right.
can see each other. And there's certain rooms that are opaque, but it's still rather, you know, you can't completely see, you know, you don't know their secret formula, but you know they've been evolving and certain things like that. So yeah, I mean, it's critical. And going back to your question, it's not a small business issue, it's not an entrepreneur issue, it's not a solopreneur issue, is not a big company issue. It's the mentality of the individuals that run those companies.
Right.
And if those individuals are keeping in tune with what's happening around, keeping in tune with what's going on around them, they would realize that online there is no depression.
Right.
Right? We're living in a depression right now. It's a recession. Economy's bad. Banks closing.
Exactly.
All kinds of different things. However, online transactions are up year to year, and it's still growing.
That's because it's one of the most, efficient mediums. And, I mean, if you're going to cut budgets, you got to migrate it to a channel that probably is going to give you ROI and, results faster than any traditional media, I guess.
No, absolutely. And the thing is, you could systematize the process,
mm-hmm.
but not systematize the conversation.
Exactly.
Because a systematized conversation killed Sprint. Sprint had a fantastic opportunity when they had a new CEO come do a commercial and he left his email address up on a commercial.
Right.
Wow, this is great. However, people sent emails to that address and got an autoresponder. And some corporate speak about, like, yeah, we're busy, we'll get back to you, blah, blah, blah. And people really did not appreciate that. It's like, why are you going to open up a door for communication and then not be there to communicate? How do you not scale, like build scalability so that you have a frequently asked questions, you have a forum about, and have open dialogue? Because once you have that open dialogue with your marketplace, they're taking time to communicate, you take time to respond, and you're attentive to their needs. They're going to remain loyal through those tough times where opportunities like going to AT&T because that's the only carrier that has the iPhone, you know, competition is tough in that, you know, in any market, right? So how do you separate yourself? And separating yourself is by giving people a sense of you caring for them and you're looking out for their best interest. And they missed the
vote
on that.
That's interesting. What I'm trying to understand, though, because what you're talking about, you know, it's the mentality and not necessarily the size of the company. But we got to face it, smaller companies don't have a brand yet. It's easier. I think the big brands have farther to fall than the little guys. The little guys have a long ways to go in terms of building awareness. They don't have the budgets. So they use social media as a way to help build awareness for their company. But from the outset, there has to be that, the authenticity and the willingness to add value without expecting anything in return. How do they do that with social media? And what kind, like, how long do they do that before they can start beginning to do a soft sell? Because at the end of the day, they have to put bread on the table, right?
Right. And I would contest that smaller companies are at an advantage, primarily because they're more agile. You have to look at the cards you dealt and do the best that you're you have to play the best hand you're dealt, right?
Okay.
Whether you're a big company or a small company. So if you're a small company, you're agile. You're able to make decisions faster. You're able to focus on a niche that is thriving and really cater to their needs, right? So now the advantage that you have as far as marketplace is concerned is that you could survey the market, ask questions, what do they want, and provide them with the solution, sometimes quicker than a major corporation because they have to spend 6 months and gather the committee, blah, 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 you know, where you could service, these individuals could service, again, other businesses, do B2B or like B2C, directly to consumer, if they listen. The primary step in social media, the first step is to listen to
right.
the marketplace. So how soon? It really depends on what do they have to offer that community that they've been listening to, right? And the listening is real-time through Twitter and other services like that, but it's also historic. You could do historical searches, right, on that particular subject matter. You could set up RSS feeds and collect data as it comes out. You could set up the Google Alert, right, and you could get a daily digest on those keywords on that marketplace sent to your inbox every single day or however frequent you want it to be, You know, that's why I created that social media kit document. And I think you have a copy of that, correct?
I do. Exactly.
So leveraging that, knowing the steps, and realizing that it's really that listening before the conversation, before you start entertaining conversations. If you have stuff of value, immediately contribute it. And don't go crazy with sending links to different places unless it complements the answer, right? But don't expect, and there's like unwritten laws about interaction in this new media, in this new society, right? Like if you're continuously sending out links, your credibility is going to go down. If you're having a conversation, linking where appropriate, forwarding other people's information where appropriate, more credibility is attained, right? And that's one of the things.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to make, so you're basically talking about promoting other stuff other than your stuff, right? It's recognizing relevant information to, let's say, people who have followed you, let's say on Twitter, but it's stuff that's not necessarily on your site. It could be elsewhere. Is that's you're talking about gaining credibility that way, as opposed to continuously saying, "Well, right. I have it on my site."
Right. Because you can't be the jack. I mean, being the jack of all trades is good, right? But then your branding suffers because it's like, what do we associate you with if you're linking to everything, right? So if you then provide, if there's questions out there and you provide the best answer that you know, and that best answer doesn't necessarily have to come from you, that adds more credibility to you, right? It's like they're just really concerned with the best answer, or what's going to address this issue. The other thing, too, to realize for branding purposes is that there's places for complementary products, right? Like if, say, you do baby clothes, you could partner up with someone that does baby food and then baby toys, and there's you could go really deep with it, right? And then you become the source for all baby things. That's what you want to focus on. Or if you are dealing with the car, all the different car parts. So it's being able to slice it. But the primary thing that a lot of entrepreneurs, even some businesses, don't really take the time to do is realize what they do best, right? Fortunately, I took Kobe. Kobe is an exam that measures your ML, your modus operandi. So what that lets you know is how you address issues. So once you know what you like, what you're passionate about, and how you address certain situations, or what is your particular USP, unique selling proposition,
mm-hmm.
or not even to the selling part yet, but how you are as an individual, right? It makes it much easier to position yourself relative to your competition, and even creating a new blue ocean strategy, a whole new strategy, a meatball sundae, right? Like something unique, right? Like there's a company that makes socks for little girls that are not identical, right? And how awesome is that? Because now the kids act as the marketing agent,
right?
Because the kids go to school and the first thing that they do is say, "Hey, look at my socks," right? And they're both different, and they now get other girls to say, "I want those socks too," because this girl has it. You know what I mean? So that becomes, and that is done by a small company, right? Like there's a show on television, The Big Idea, I think it's called, where they talk about that stuff. Like I saw one that was a thong where they had like words and things written on the thong, like at the back of the thong, the stuff that shows when someone's bending over, something like that. It's like advertising. It's like, oh, we wanted to make use of that real estate there. That's a small company. They just found an idea and they just did it. And it might not appeal for everybody, and that's the point. You got to be really focused on that one thing and really go deep with it. And, the market would dictate that where to go. Because when you study the evolution of companies, like eBay did not start off as a they didn't start off as auction. PayPal did not start off being the commerce site. They didn't start off that way. They evolved over time. The biggest thing someone could do is take action. Because once you take that action, that would prove or disprove what you're trying to do. The market will dictate it. you do some preliminary research. You don't kill yourself with it because you could overanalyze and analysis paralysis and you get stuck on that route. You just focus on what you do best, the passion. Is there a market there? Great. Go after it. Find out what they want. Survey it. Have a conversation. Start doing stuff. Say, okay, they've given me enough information where I can start providing stuff value. Then you do a sample and put it out there and test it out and see if it has some legs. And that's the evolutionary process. And you don't stop doing that. That's the essence of business. You buy low, sell high, and you continuously put stuff out that is appealing to your marketplace. I heard the best quote. The best quote that I heard is, you don't find products for customers. The customers let you know what products to create.
Mm.
Right?
So. Yeah.
And I think too many people are trying to work at it the wrong way.
Build a better mousetrap, right? If you build it, they will come type of approach that I guess the top-down used to have years ago.
Right. You could build it, but they're not going to come because there's so many other people competing for attention, right?
Right.
So this is why the social media thing is so important. That's why it's so critical to understand, to listen first, because you get to really embrace the language of what's being discussed and how people are communicating with each other. And then you can start building stuff. And the stuff is based on what you've been hearing, the pains. What are the pains that you're trying to address? And like any type of convenience is a premium to being a convenient resource, right? So... So that's where the business is. Highlight this pain, be the solution to the pain, and continuously add value with other supplemental products. Then you could go back-end stuff, and then you could join venture partners, and then you could do affiliate programs. So you could really extend the brand reach, right? And you have a lot more flexibility as a new corporation, as a small business, than if you were a big business, because there's too many moving parts. You know what I mean?
So for a small business, they use social media as a way to figure out what the market wants. They want to listen. They want to add value. You talked about it being a starting point, there's actually other things that you could do, but as an initial traffic driver. Do you have examples or of clients that have used it and have done tremendously well as a reach vehicle for their business?
Could you repeat that again? I'm sorry.
So
for the people that have done
social media mainly as their main marketing vehicle initially, let's say because they're just constrained by funds, but it's been a way for them to start seeing some success in terms of traffic, in terms of some initial revenue because they've incorporated some of these tactics that you've talked about into their business. Because you talked about it being the starting point. And that there are other vehicles that you can use. It's not just social media, but social media is an important part of building your business and validating that you are in the business that you should be going after because you are tapping into your market, because you're listening, because you're adding value. Do you have clients that have used those tactics and have as a result gotten lots of traffic and sizable increase in revenue as a result of it?
Yeah, almost all the clients that I deal with. I mean, there was one client that grew membership from zero, from nothing, to 2,000 members within a year. So we had a continuous increase, primarily because we were just providing their market share. And this is the example that I mentioned to you earlier about setting up the company that the organization that had monthly events, right?
Because
putting out content, they had a limited budget, and I worked with that, and they had increased not only sales but in a reputation of the marketplace because they were seeking funding because they were nonprofit. And they needed to be really creative as far as like how to tap into this money, right? Because nonprofits are always seeking sponsorships and things like that when it's a very competitive landscape here in the Boston area, right? So they needed to separate themselves from a lot of the organizations that were vying for the same amount of money, you know?
Let me see. I just had a couple more questions. So in terms of your success, can you, based on the stuff that you've talked about, how much of that success have you realized through your own business?
It's really taken off. What has it allowed me to do is really understand what the market has wanted. And that was the genesis of the social media kit, because I realized that for not only entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, and people that like to do it themselves, but primarily for my marketplace, which is small businesses, how to go in there and impact them, how to go in there and realize that there's always opportunities for growth, and they need a systematic way to do that.
Right.
It really started solidifying itself the more I started listening to them and their issues. So I started putting out links and resources that I've collected that I've actually taken for granted. But when I speak to at conferences or when I speak in a meeting, a town hall, or whatever it is, I realize that, wow, there's such a big gap, right? There's such a gap, knowledge gap, as far as, like, who knows this information. And it's not just knowing about it. It's, like, how to effectively use it without being overwhelmed. So I'm crafting a bunch of products around that where it's, here are the tools, right? Here are what you have to do. If you don't want to do it, outsource it to me. My team will take care of it. And know that there's a continuous growth process. So I'm in the process of creating a bunch of mind maps, a bunch of step-by-steps, a bunch of those types of things that doesn't overwhelm people, because I found a lot of the stuff that's out there is like 100 plugins for Firefox. I was like, okay, at the end of the day, how many people are going to go through all that, first of all?
Wow.
So I wanted to create something simple, like 3 to 5 things that you need to do that you could do today, and then tomorrow I'll give you the next 3 to 5 things, and then it's a sense of progression, right? And then give you the big picture frame, you know, the big picture, the year plan, and then here's how we're going to get there. And, it's a long-term play, and most of my clients stick with me for at least a year, minimum 6 months, because what can you do in less time? It's an evolutionary process,
yeah.
You know? And the great thing is that you always could be tweaking, enhancing, testing. You could do heat maps. You could do split testing. You could do a multivariant test. There's so many ways to improve, and a lot of those resources are for free. You just need to put some code on the site, you know, and just be creative and give, you know, your marketplace what you think they want, and then ask them to confirm, hey, did that work or it didn't? How should we improve it? And be just committed to that, you know. So it's easy. So it's not the client base. I'm really just systematizing the process to make it easy from beginning to end, you know, and that's really what social media has opened up the door to really validate what I already had a sense I knew, but I needed to validate. I couldn't just go out there and do it, because it's the whole building day will come. Like, no, I had to really continuously listen, and it doesn't stop. It's an ongoing thing.
Now, are most people that you talk to aware or that this is not something that's going to net them results right away, that this is an evolution, that they probably won't see their first sale for, I don't know, a few months? Because, I mean, they'll say, well, why should I put in the time and the money for consulting that's not going to give me, like, immediate results? Where they can, let's say, well, they'll probably do SEM because it's not that expensive, but they may look to alternative vehicles that will potentially give them results right away. How do you respond to that?
Well, here's the thing, right? Like, it really depends on how mature their product is because you could have product sales immediately, the same day even, right? And, I mean, you do a certain technique. You do a PPC campaign, right? Or sending out a message within Twitter. If it's the right audience, that's it. That's a sale, right? So it really depends on what their offering currently is and if there's a message to market match, right? For those people, and it's sitting down and realizing and setting up even the page, right, their Twitter landing page or whatever, you know, their Facebook page or the fan page or their MySpace page or their StumbleUpon, like setting up the profile, coming up with the complete brand strategy. If it's like a YouTube, how to effectively put that video out there so there's a link back to your site and a call to action. So there's certain things that you could do almost immediately. The biggest thing is understanding what the offering is, what the unique selling proposition is, and what content do they have to work with, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't have to wait months, right? And you don't have to have a big budget. For example, I don't know if you heard of Will It Blend? Have you heard of that?
Yeah, that was that the iPod? One?
That was, well, Will It Blend from BlendTech. BlendTech is a blender.
Right.
They did blend an iPod, and so funny how this world is. They blended the iPod, and they sold the remnant on eBay, and they actually got some money that they donated to charity for like $2,000. So it was more expensive than the actual unit itself. So
right.
So this is an example. Right? They had $50 to start that whole campaign.
Right.
The first BlendTech video was $50, and that included a meal. So
it's
it didn't take
though.
A lot of money.
Yeah.
But
the funny thing about one thing I wanted to throw out there, though, with video, it's only as viral as, you know, the way consumers or people view it or perceive it. Because you can't make a viral video necessarily. You may try, and you may think, okay, it has to be quirky, it has to be unique. There has to be all these components that say viral. But if it's not perceived that way, then it won't be spreadable, right? So something like that, was it something, you know, you could plan it, but that one, it took off. Some of the ones that companies pay thousands of dollars for, they don't work. So there isn't necessarily a formula, or is there?
Not per se, because then everybody would be like hitting the video lottery every day, right?
So I think so.
And they kind of are. Here's the thing, right? A lot of those videos that cost thousands of dollars are just too manufactured, right? One of the main reasons why the Will It Blend was such a success is because that guy is like that. That guy that blends, he's actually like that. So he sounds like he's from like the 1950s or whatever, but that's how he is. And he's so authentic with it. And they're really genuine in what they do. They actually test products like that, right? Mm-hmm. They have a whole lab where all they do is just test bats and all kind of weird things just to see if the blades would get to it. And they're like, okay, why don't we just put that out there and see what happens, you know? And, yeah, you're right, it took off, and there's no guarantee because, again, there'll be tens of thousands of these things growing. But the thing is, there kind of is to a degree because there's so many sub-niches, right? And what appeals to one sub-niche is not going to appeal to the other sub-niche. It's getting to the masses that's the issue. Right? Because there's still people that don't know what BlendTech is or Will It Blend. So there's still an opportunity for growth for them, you know?
And it's funny because I think once mainstream media gets a hold of it, then you know you've made it, right? It's suddenly something that they're talking about on the radio, and then people on the radio, and then the radio announcers start telling other people, and that even increases the volume of viewers to the video. But if it's, I guess, And success in a lot of ways is the perception of the company who gets all the traffic. They could say 10,000 views. That's amazing for me. And what did that do for me? And other people may not need that kind of volume to say this is a real success. So I guess it's like you said, it's based on the niche, and it's based on, you know, the type of success that they perceive.
Right, because, and that's, you highlight a very important area, which is metrics, right? And metrics complement goals, right? Goals need to have some sort of mnemonic representation. You need to quantify a goal. Otherwise, it's not really an effective goal because you don't know if you've reached it or not, right? So now in social media, the big debate is like, what's the effectiveness? You know, what's the ROI? What are the numbers? Is a lot of views really going to translate into a lot of sales? And how much does it translate? And blah, 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 and all those other things. And, for example, another case study, H&R Block. H&R Block only is in business for 4 months of the year, right, from like January to April. That's it. And they're a multi-billion-dollar company. And what they did is they just created this guy named Truman. They created a YouTube page for him. And all he does is like sing little ditties, and he represents the company, and he does it in a silly way, right? And that really worked well for them, and they really translated it into a lot. And a lot of times, a lot of these things like videos is they have contests to include the marketplace, and the contest gets a lot of buzz. And I think the general population is really embracing this whole concept of contest. They know that this could be their big break to become known. And, you know, so there's certain things that are going to die out. I'm not sure how much longer this whole contest thing is going to work, but if you're willing to put $5,000 in someone's hands, where are you going to, and you're going to get all this buzz, right? Do you put $5,000 in an ad that is static in one way, or are you going to give it, or you're going to basically have the best of the best, the cream rise to the top, a proven, have someone create a proven video for you, right? Because you could tell it's proven because of the views and people going out there. I mean, you could bootleg some of that stuff, but the good stuff still rises to the top. So it's the same concept of American Idol, right? What does American Idol, why does that win? Because at the very end, they know that they're going to have a bestseller on their hands because that person has already generated not only fans but passionate fans that are willing to vote and they're willing to, you know, really stand by the person that wins, right? So that's a winning solution. So I would say that like an American Idol opened up the door to a lot of the things that are being incorporated into social media, right? The essence of that, because it's not only television, it's the website, and it's the cell phone, mobile media. It's still untapped, but they've tapped into that, right?
Right.
So that, they tapped into those three forms of communication, the traditional television, but they didn't leave it at that. They think, hey, since you're going to be in front of the television, you're most likely going to have your phone there, and you're probably going to be texting back and forth about what's happening. Why don't you send us a text about who you think the winner is. So you have them interacting on there. And then when the television show isn't live, you could go to the website to find out what you missed, see the videos, get more understanding of those who the performers are, get the clips, vote, and you got basically a 24/7 audience,
mm-hmm.
right, until the grand finale. And then it starts again, and then there's like a record deal, hey, is this American Idol going to beat the last American Idol when they release an album? And then their whole story becomes, and then the people that didn't win, you know, are they going to be just as famous as the people that, so it's a continuous process, and they opened up the door there. And then they have a lot of participation because at the very beginning they do, you know, they do the hunt for who the sitter, you know, the singers are, entertainers are in those various cities. Then they have like the blooper reel and get people engaged. So they give you, like, essentially a whole cycle. And this is what's happening. And this is translates right into social media because it has to be thought of as a long-term evolutionary systematic growth strategy, right? You just can't put a tweet out on Twitter and expect it to last forever because it's gone. you've only captured the people that were looking at it at that time. Yeah, historically, you can look at stuff, but then you got to keep moving. It's a progressive thing. You know, a website is a continuously evolving piece of software. You know what I mean? That's it. That's all it is. And the reason why, for example, search engines like blogs is because blogs, by nature, are meant to be updated on a continuous basis. Because what's a blog? It's a weblog, which is an online journal, and you should be documenting or writing in your journal on a continuous basis for growth.
Right.
No, what I'm saying is all the stuff interrelates to each other, right? And it's figuring out the best tools to leverage for the medium, right? So in that example with American Idol, you have TV, you have the phone, you have the internet, among other things, right? And then with all these other examples, it's finding out what works. Like, for example, Obama announced his vice president over text message. Was it a hit? Who knows? But he's doing something. He's innovative. He's engaging people where they are. For example, I was doing some studies on video. The vice president of CBS International or Interactive stated that no longer CBS going to force people to go to their site. They're going to go to where the people are and put their videos there, right? And if they want more exclusive stuff, they maybe go to the CBS site. But that's also something that's very important. You can't just force people to go to your site. You have to go where people are and establish a presence. It's like a mall. Every mall has the Gap, right? So the Gap realized that they need to be in those malls because that's where the people are. They didn't open up a Gap right across the street or a block away. They put it where the people were. Where is the traffic? Right. That's what YouTube is all about, right? That's what Facebook is all about. That's what MySpace was originally about, and it still is about, right? So this is a place, and the people that created these places, all they did was just open up a mall, you know?
Right.
YouTube is a mall, and it just focused on videos. Facebook is a mall, and it focuses on, you know, a little bit more interconnectivity, it's networking, right? LinkedIn is another mall. It's maybe a little bit more static than all the rest. Right?
Right.
So it's leveraging those tools for the best resources, and that's what I do when I consult, is like talk to these clients, these small businesses, and figure out what business that they're in, where is their marketplace most likely to hang out, and then I establish a presence there. Then go to the site and put some things like email, RSS feeds, mobile feeds, yeah, newsletter feeds on their site so that they don't have to come back. They just go, if it's good information, they'll subscribe. If not, hopefully you'll catch them the next time. But you want to distribute information to where the people are. That's really the key.
That's important. This is great. You've provided me with a lot of content